from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, Trent Messmeyer. Good morning, Trent.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. You know, if you were out in the mountains yesterday, it was one of those just glorious Utah powder days. The winds were light in the morning. We had about 4 to 7 inches of snow along the Wasatch Front and Park City Ridgeline area. However, yesterday, right about the 1 o'clock hour, the winds were the spoiler. The southerly winds picked up yesterday afternoon, and it definitely ruined the powder party, especially along those upper elevations. This morning, those winds continue to blow, generally from the southerly direction, and with plenty of snow available to transport and move around, that's definitely our number one avalanche problem today, our wind slabs. And the winds today will continue loading those slopes throughout much of the day, and you can expect those shallow winds you can expect those shallow wind slabs along upper elevation ridgelines, especially along those Park City ridgelines. And these wind slabs definitely could extend beyond ridges, down slope, you know, sub-ridges, gullies, little breakovers and terrain features in the mountains. That's where we generally find those wind slabs. They're pretty easy to identify. You know, you just want to look for pillowy-looking snow. If you have your ski pole or your board and it sounds hollow underneath you, that's probably a good sign to move to a different location. So our bottom line for today is most terrain will continue with a low avalanche danger. However, a moderate danger does exist for wind slab avalanches at all upper elevations today. Again, be on the lookout for wind drifted snow and avoid being on pillowy, hollow sounding snow. As always, if you're heading out into the mountains, make sure to get the full forecast at utahavalanchecenter.org.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much. It's 8:13. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the Utah legislature enters its fourth week. On the phone with a recap of last week's business and a look ahead, I have the managing editor of utahpolicy.com, Brian Schott. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Let's start with education spending. Where are we at this point?
Well, lawmakers are squeezing the budget now, trying to find as many dollars as they can for education. One of the things that had been floated, let me back up a little bit. First of all, they were going through the base budgeting process, which we've talked about before, trying to find a number of cuts. They were able to identify around $69 million in cuts. $35 million of that is one-time money. $34 million of that is ongoing money. And what they decided to do, or at least the House is floating this idea, House Republicans, they're floating the idea of taking half of that extra money and giving it to a raise to Utah school teachers. It would be about a $2,000 a year raise going directly to each one of the 18,000 school teachers here in the state. Then the other part of this proposal, they would take more, the rest of that money, and invest it into the WPU units in individual districts, which districts could then turn into teacher raises if they want. So potentially there could be around a $6,200 raise for individual teachers coming next year. But I don't know how far they're going to get with that. That was just a proposal floated by House Republicans on Friday. Senate Republicans said, we just don't have the money to do that. They're just not able to do that. And I think what that really is it's a difference about how they want to spend that extra money they were able to find in the base budgets. I think a lot of Senate Republicans are worried about an economic downturn in the future. They put a lot of money this year into the rainy day fund. They want to pay off some buildings that they bonded for with one-time money. So it remains to be seen how far they get on that proposal, but lawmakers are very interested in trying to find as much extra money for education as they can, especially since they're staring down the barrel of a proposed tax hike, a sales and income tax hike that's going to be on the November ballot from the Our Schools Now petition that would generate an extra $700 million per year for Utah schools.
Yeah, and I guess that's where we kind of left it last week, was that there was some resistance by the legislators to give schools too much in the event that did pass. So now it sounds like we're kind of going back and forth, kind of the pendulum swinging here, huh?
Well, you know, what whatever they come up with is not going to be as much as our schools now is trying to get past. That's just the reality of things. That money is just, it's not going to be the same level as what the ballot initiative has on it. So, you know, lawmakers are trying to do something. I don't know if they're going to be able to, and it's all going to come down to how much money they have. And we'll get new revenue numbers, not next Monday, but probably next Tuesday on the 20th. That's when they're expecting to see these new consensus budget numbers, and they'll know just how much extra money they'll have to spend. It's probably going to be somewhere around $500 million they'll have to spend, but if you listen to the at least what they're saying on the Senate side of things, that money's already spoken for, so they don't have a lot of extra money, at least, to spend, because they've already figured out what they want to do with it.
Okay, let's see. Medical cannabis. Gosh, there was a passion plea on the Trib's opinion page yesterday by a woman who deals with chronic pain, asking lawmakers how they sleep at night, knowing that they could make a difference for people like her if they were just a bit more compassionate. So where are we with this? Are they lightening up?
Well, it all depends on who you listen to. Representative Brad Daw has decided to do a ballot initiative, or a couple of bills this year. One would have allowed terminally ill patients to try medical cannabis. That's a right to try bill. That one passed out of the House on Friday. But his other bill, which would have allowed the Utah Department of Agriculture to grow and regulate medical cannabis, that one failed. So lawmakers, you know, really haven't done anything to address the issue other than the right to try bill, which I don't know how far that thing's going to get in the Senate. And they're just, again, they're looking down the barrel of this initiative that would allow medical cannabis. And they're really worried about the way that this thing is written. If you listen to them, they say it is very poorly written and it's going to lead to a lot of unintended consequences. So they're trying to find a way around that. There is talk of, as I spoke to you before, there is talk of doing an SB 54 on the ballot initiative, but I'm not sure if they're actually going to be able to get that done. Or if they're going to move forward, because there's been a lot of resistance to that as well. And they don't like the optics of trying to mess with a ballot initiative, but they're really worried that this ballot initiative is going to do something that they don't like, that people who vote for it don't intend, and that may actually lead to de facto allowing people to grow medical marijuana or grow marijuana in their homes, and possibly even what would amount to recreational use because of some of the ways that this ballot initiative is written. And that's what lawmakers are worried about. And so they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with that.
Right. This kind of pops to my mind when you talk about unintended consequences. We saw, like with the surrogate bill, that allows people to carry other people's babies. And yet the mm-hmm. unintended consequence of that, you know, when sponsor of that bill was like wanting now to repeal it because of the unintended consequences of same-sex couples actually using the legislation to have children.
So. Right. You're talking about Senator Lyle Hilliard. He championed the surrogacy bill in 2005, and now he's trying to repeal it because he never intended it for to be used by same-sex couples or even single people who want to have children. You know, same-sex marriage was never even in the discussion when he passed this bill, and then the Supreme Court legalized it nationwide and had an unintended consequence. So he's trying to repeal it. I don't know how far that's going to get. Again, the optics look really, really bad on this. But you know, I'm not sure how far that this bill is going to get. But this is what happens when you pass bills. And one of the arguments that lawmakers have up here as to legislation versus a petition initiative, you know, legislation can be much more targeted. Petition initiative has to be very broad, and once they put it out there, they can't change it. The lawmakers have to change it. But the people who are pushing these initiatives say, you've had your chance to address this. Lawmakers have been talking about medical cannabis for three sessions, and they haven't moved at all, and people are starting to get really frustrated. So that's sort of the push and pull of this entire issue.
All right. Let's see. Where are we with regard to the abortion bill and Down syndrome, and this especially impacting Down syndrome fetuses?
Right. Representative Carrie-Anne Lisenby has a bill that would prohibit abortion in the case where the main reason or the only reason that a parent is seeking this abortion is because the baby would be born with Down syndrome. Right now, legislative lawyers are saying this thing is likely to be found unconstitutional in its current form. But the House passed it anyway. They really limited debate on the House floor using some legislative maneuvers to make sure that only a few people really had a chance to address this on the House floor, because this is a debate that could have raged for hours. They passed it out. It's heading over to the Senate. I am hearing rumblings, and the only thing people will tell me is that when the bill finally passes the Senate, it will no longer be unconstitutional. I don't know what that means. I don't know what sort of maneuvers they might be trying to use to get around that constitutional note. If you remember a few years ago, the legislature changed the rules on constitutional notes, where legislative lawyers review a bill to decide whether or not it may run afoul of the Constitution. And lawmakers were getting a lot of these constitutional notes, and they didn't like it, so they made it harder for a bill to get a constitutional note. So now if it gets a constitutional note, as this bill does, then you can pretty much guarantee that it is extremely likely to be found unconstitutional. So I don't know what they're going to try to do with this, but the bill is headed over to the Senate, where I'm sure that some changes are probably in the offing.
Okay. And then there's also a constitutional amendment brewing to allow the legislature to call themselves into special session. I guess, give me a little bit of the backstory on this. Right now, the governor only has that authority?
Yeah, right now, only the governor can call the legislature into special session, and the governor decides what's on the agenda. You know, this is all stemming from the fight over the special election in the 3rd Congressional District. As you'll remember, when Representative Jason Chaffetz stepped down, the legislature wanted to have a special session to set the rules for that special election. But the governor said all it says in state statute is that the governor shall call a special session. There are no rules there. So the governor said, we're just going to follow the existing rules, allowing both the signature and the convention route to the ballot. And it was thought that if the legislature had a chance to change that, they would have eliminated the signature gathering route or even passed rules that would have made it a lot easier for one of them to win the Republican nomination, which is pretty much the election, because that's not a seat that a Democrat can win. Anyway, so the governor decided not to call a special session. There were some legal wrangling back and forth. So this is just sort of a battle between the executive branch and the legislature that's come to the head because of that issue. Lawmakers have talked about this for years. They would very much like to have the ability to call themselves into special session and decide what they want to consider. This would be very handy if there were some budgetary items or if there were some other pressing issues. And remember, the governor would still be able to veto whatever they passed, and then they would have to have a veto session. The governor really opposes this proposed constitutional amendment. It would need to pass the House and the Senate with a two-thirds vote. The governor could not veto this proposed constitutional amendment. It would go directly to voters if lawmakers can get the votes, and I think they do have the votes. Governor Gary Herbert, I'm hearing behind the scenes, is really trying to stop them from passing this proposed amendment and having it go to voters because he does not like it.
This could have been interesting. I mean, we may not have seen John Curtis actually elected, right, since he got the signatures.
Yeah, there were a number of people in the legislature who wanted that nomination. And so, you know, it would make a lot of sense that the legislature would sort of game the system. And that's one of the reasons that Governor Gary Herbert said he wasn't going to call a special session. He did not want legislators to game the system to favor one of their own in this election. So he just used existing election law. And you'll remember there was a huge fight over a legal opinion that the legislature asked from Attorney General Sean Reyes. And he was going to give it to them about the legality of what the governor did. And then the governor said, no, you can't do that. It's attorney-client privilege. There was a huge fight over it. Turns out that the legal opinion said the governor was right in what he did. So, you know, there's just been a lot of tension between Herbert and the legislative branch. There's that bill. There's another bill out there that would compel the attorney general to give the legislature a legal opinion when they requested it. So that's going around what Governor Gary Herbert did in this thing. So there were a lot of shenanigans, or I would say potential shenanigans by lawmakers. The Governor Gary Herbert stopped when he declined to go into a special session over that third district election.
Yeah. And I guess just an observation, it just feels like it's one more example of a lot of government overreach we've seen in this session.
Well, I don't know if it's government overreach. You know, if you listen to the arguments of lawmakers, they make a lot of sense on this issue. You know, they are a co-equal branch of government. So why should they have the ability to call themselves into special session? And they're not going to do it if, you know, if they've got a bill that's not going to pass. They're going to do it if they've got a bill that's going to pass and it probably has enough votes to override a governor's veto. So you wouldn't see this very often. I mean, you wouldn't see this a lot. I'm guessing that if it happened in this third congressional district election, the lawmakers would pass something and Herbert would end up vetoing it, or he would have to, and would have to be a lot of push and pull to find something that Herbert would actually sign. So, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to lead to a lot of government overreach. I think that this is a power that, you know, if you listen to lawmakers, they make a very compelling argument that they're an equal branch of government. So why wouldn't they have this ability?
All right. And then real quick, House Bill 86. This is the assisted suicide amendment. Last I had heard, it passed the House. It would make it a second degree felony if it can be proved that somebody provided the means for someone to commit suicide. Is this going to move through, do you think?
I'm not really sure. I don't know if the Senate has an appetite for this. This will be one of those things. There's a lot of horse trading that happens in the final couple weeks of the election. You know, so this is a bill that I don't know if senators really want to spend some time debating. If you remember, Democratic Representative Rebecca Chavez Houck tried to change the bill on the House floor because she's trying to do a right to die bill where people who are terminally ill, they have the right to take their own lives, you know, assisted suicide. So she tried to change the bill for that. The House beat that back. I don't think her bill is going to pass. I don't know how much appetite there is in the Senate. It all depends on how much horse trading there is between the House and the Senate, because this is one of the insidery baseball things you'll see. You'll start to see legislation slow down either in the House or the Senate. If the House wants the Senate to pass something, you know, they'll start to slow down Senate bills. Same thing with the Senate if they want the House to pass something. So this is sort of the push and pull that's going to happen over the last few weeks. You're really not going to see that start to happen until next week in earnest, when they're down to like 2.5 weeks left to go.
Okay. And just one final thing for those of us who don't like the spring forward. A new twist this year, instead of doing away with daylight savings time, there was a bill that would have just put Utah into the central time zone. That was, just basically dead on arrival, huh?
Senator Wayne Harper, he put up a new twist that would sort of put Utah in the central time zone, and then we would not observe daylight savings time. So, it would basically keep us an hour ahead of Denver all year long. A Senate committee said this is way too complicated. It was sort of an interesting twist on the way to do it. Senate committee said this is way too complicated, so we're not going to do it, and it died last week.
Okay, Brian, we're going to skip a week, but we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for your time this morning.
Sure.
First, this Thursday, the Park City Film Series and National Ability Center present the screening of a new documentary. In the studio with details, they have Katie Wang with the film series, along with the director of the National Ability Center, Gail Burrill. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Katie, why don't you start with us? Just tell us a little bit about the film, when and where.
Yep. So we've got Andre, the Voice of Wine. This is a brand new film. It's an exclusive screening. The film premiered at the Bernal, the Berlin Film Festival, last year, and then just most recently at the Mill Valley Film Festival. We'll be showing this Thursday, February 15th at 7 o'clock, and we'll have a wine tasting, as always. It's starting at 6 o'clock. And this is a partnership that we've done for the past few years with the National Ability Center, kind of their lead up to their Red, White, and Snow event. It's always fun to bring in a film about wine and kind of pairing that with some delicious wine as well.
So tell me about the film itself.
So the film is about Andrei Chelyachev. He's a Russian immigrant. He came to the United States in the late 30s. under the kind of working with George Latour and the Beaulieu Vineyards. And so during Prohibition, California wine really just, you know, was at its all-time low. You know, they're making sacramental wine, and it was just very sweet and not very good. And George Latour wanted to make California wine, elevate it to the level of French wine. So he recruited Andre to come to the Napa Valley, and, you know, he's now known as kind of the dean of California wine. And so if you're familiar with the film Bottle Shock, in 1976, when the California wines were winning at the blind taste testing in France, Andre has been credited with really, you know, being behind that win. And so just has influenced, you know, California wines, wines in Oregon, Washington State, and just kind of brought a sensibility about the art of winemaking, not only kind of how it works in the laboratory to really get it to that level of taste, but this also how you describe it. And just his love of wine and his passion for it, really what has made California wine what it is today. So just a really interesting story that I think most of us don't know unless you're really into wine. And if you are familiar with wine and kind of engaged with it as much as many of the people who attend Red, White, and Snow are, you know, it's certainly interesting to hear a story and just hear more about this man who's had such an incredible influence on winemaking in this country.
All right. So, Gail, how's the NAC involved in this?
Well, first off, with that description, how could you not want to go to that film? We, again, partnered with Katie in the Park City Film Series several years ago. We found that folks that came to Red, White, and Snow were looking for a little more wine education, but our event is pretty packed, and how do you make all of that work? By looking out a couple weeks ahead of time and providing some wine education was a great opportunity for us to partner. In addition, it's a great introductory price point. It's an amazing deal, really, to come out and see the film, learn a little bit about wine. And for those folks that want to be involved in the wine culture but maybe not come to a Red, White, and Snow event but still support the NAC and the Park City Film Series, this is the event for you.
Okay. So tickets are how much?
Tickets are $35. It includes 3 glasses of wine. Our sponsor, Vine Lore, this year is bringing in some wines that Andre worked, some of the vineyards that he worked directly with, and certainly wines that he influenced up and down the West Coast. So, you know, we've done everything from Somme into the bottle to decanted last year, and now Andre Chalichek.
So we're talking some decent wine then, huh?
Yes, some great wine, and just, you know, kind of get you in the mood to see the film. And then once you see it, you kind of understand better, you know, what you've just tasted and how he influenced that. But tickets are limited. We have about 200 tickets available for the wine tasting. We're about half sold out, so if you want to get your ticket, do it now, parkcityfilmseries.org. And then if you just want to enjoy the film and are not interested in the wine tasting, you can do that as well. And that's just our regular ticket prices of $8 for general admission and $7 for students and seniors. And certainly you must be 21 or over to participate in the wine tasting.
Okay.
Goes without saying.
And we will have some giveaways for sure, including some tickets to Red, White, and Snow that we'll give away at the event. So we're looking forward to that. If folks are still interested in Red, White, and Snow overall, we do have tickets Thursday night for Uncorked. VIP is sold out, but we still have some tickets then. And Friday night we have our Vintner Dinners. There are still some tickets to that. Wine on the Mountain and the Gala are sold out. The other thing that is really awesome and fun that we would love to have some help with is volunteers for our Vintner Dinners. So we have volunteers who help serve wine and food at various homes, and it's a great opportunity to learn a little bit more about food. The chef usually treats you to a little bit of taste here and there, especially along with some wine too at the end of the evening, and it's a great benefit for us. It really connects our mission. We're always volunteer driven, and so if anybody's interested or has time also on that Friday night to volunteer for our Vintner Dinners, we would love to have your help, and you could find our information at discovernac.org.
Okay. This is a big deal, Red, White, and Snow, for you guys.
Yeah,
it
is.
It's a major fundraiser, huh?
Yep. It's about 20% of our annual budget. So it is a great deal. And it's also really just an incredible opportunity to share our mission. I think when you see people for multiple days and you're able to show different parts of your mission, because the NAC is really so complicated, from a Paralympic athlete, which we're super excited to watch the Olympics and know the Paralympics are coming up next, and our international work in Korea, all the way down to our life programs, our life skill programs, like our coach programs, or being out on the river on Moab. It's hard to show that all at once in one night. And so to have that opportunity to highlight all of the impact that our community helps make happen during Red, White, and Snow is really great for us.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, just a great night to come celebrate wine, the art of wine, the National Ability Center, and just kind of our community. I mean, that's really what we started it for. It's, you know, we like to bring in these films, but if we can connect them to our community, so much the better. Kind of elevates the evening and certainly our mission, as well as the mission of the NAC. So ParkCityFilmSeries.org. I want to thank VineLore, our sponsor, for bringing in some great wine. So we'll see you Thursday night, 6 o'clock for the wine tasting, 7 o'clock for the film.
Okay, Katie, thank you. Gail, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me now on the phone from Pyeongchang, South Korea, Tom Kelly, Vice President of Communications for U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Good morning, Tom. Or good night, I guess.
Good morning, Leslie. How are things back in Park City?
Well, we finally got some snow flurries here, and I guess it's like winter there, too, huh?
Yeah, and you know, it's actually been really interesting. People are talking a lot about the weather, and I just keep reminding them, you know, it's the Winter Olympics, and it's been a little cold, humid more than anything else. Temperature's actually not all that low, but the humidity makes it kind of biting, and you get a little bit of wind, and it does make a real difference. And we did have a lot of wind today, which forced postponement, actually. The women's giant slalom wreaked a little bit of havoc with some of the other events, but so far things coming off pretty well here, and particularly on the snowboarding side.
Okay, well, let's start there. Of course, the first gold medal for Team USA going to a 17-year-old kid for snowboard slope style.
Yeah, a little Red Girard. And I remember when he first came to Park City, we did a rookie camp about 4 or 5 years ago, and I think he was about 13 years old at the time, just a really little kid. He's not a whole lot bigger right now, but boy, he packed a really big punch in that slopestyle course at Phoenix Park on Sunday to pick up the first gold for Team USA, and then his teammate Jamie Anderson coming back in an event that a lot of America saw live on NBC primetime last night, Sunday evening. She picked up a repeat gold in the women's slopestyle. Now, Red's an interesting individual. He's actually the youngest men's Winter Olympic gold medalist. He's also the first gold medalist born in the 21st century. And for Jamie Anderson, a veteran, picking up a repeat title is never easy. Despite windy conditions at Phoenix Park today, she was really, really well ahead of the class, picking up her second straight gold.
Yeah, and just talk a little bit about that. I mean, here, the 17-year-old kid, he's been on the team for a year. His best result was a second place in a Revolution Tour in Mammoth. I mean, so not a big deal, I guess, there. But just, I mean, did he come out of nowhere, or he's just been...
Well, not really. He actually has quite a few more results than that. He was one of the top qualifiers on the tour, and if we were to have picked one person coming into the games, he would have been the pick as the one that would have been probably the most likely to win a medal. He did really well in the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix this year and has done pretty well in the World Cup tour as well. So he, despite the fact that he's just 17, he's pretty notable. He's been in our program since he was 13, starting on the rookie team. So somebody that's come along starting with the Rev Tour and working his way up to X Games, Du Tour, and the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix. So no real big surprise there. I think the one thing that that was notable is that he actually picked up the gold medal. I think that was something that people might not have bet on, but certainly no big surprise. Red Girard is going to be a force to be reckoned with for some years now.
Cool. Let's see, talk about ski jumping here. As you'd mentioned, it was windy. It didn't impact the jumps this morning?
No, the winds actually subsided quite a bit. They did have some delay problems with the women's ski jumping, that event just concluding about an hour ago. It was a good event. Sarah Hendrickson leading the way, finishing in 19th. Abby Rehnquist in her final jump as an athlete, picking up 29th. Anita England finishing in 31st. You know, while we were challenging for the podium there, it was a happy day for the women. They have come a long ways with this program, and particularly for Sarah to make it back to her second Olympics, and for her good friend Abby Rehnquist, both of them growing up here in Park City, to get to her first game. So pretty happy campers there today. And I will say, too, a tremendous cheering section from Park City. And it was good to see so many friends in the stands here at the Alpensia Ski Jump.
Okay, so yeah, so Abby, just she's done. That was it. Not even going to finish the rest of the season, huh?
This was her swan song, and, you know, it's been a lifetime goal and a goal that she just missed in 2014 and rededicated herself over the last 4 years and really put down some excellent international results this year on the World Cup Tour to earn her spot and to earn the ability to get two jumps at the Olympics. And she retires with a big smile on her face and a lot of pride for what she's accomplished for herself and also for women's ski jumping. I think you'll continue to see her through her variety of different engagements with the youth sports community in Park City and particularly with her foundation.
Okay. We also saw Freestyle Moguls on TV last night. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was another tough night for the USA. Casey Andringa, a real dark horse who is not on the national team, came out of the selections process in December to earn a spot in the World Cup and took that opportunity to earn a spot on the Olympic team, finishing fifth today, making it into the medal round. But unfortunately, just one bobble on his final jump cost him enough points to drop him down to fifth. The women's competition taking place last night at Phoenix Park. No medals for the women. In fact, no women into the medals round. Jalen Kauf, the number one ranked skier in the world, just barely missing the medal round, finishing in seventh. So that wraps up for the moguls team. The aerials team will be back in action or be in action later this week as freestyle continues over at Phoenix Park.
Okay, and then in cross country, Jesse Diggins off the podium, but still a great finish in the skiathlon.
Yeah, it's the best U.S. women's finish ever. Jesse Diggins fifth in the skiathlon to open things up on Sunday at the Alpensia Cross Country Center. All eyes, though, right now are really focused on the sprint, the classic sprint, the individual sprint, which is coming up on Tuesday. And actually, if we look ahead, that's only about, I think it's about 16 or 17 hours now here in Pyeongchang before we get into that event. One of the best opportunities for medals in that event, and it's going to be a few people on the women's side. First of all, Jesse Diggins will be a threat in that event along with Sadie Bjornsson, and on the men's side, Simi Hamilton, Andy Newell will be the top guns for the USA. So that's going to be one to watch, and that's taking place around 6 o'clock or so in Pyeongchang time. So you'll be able to watch that on NBC and also the live streaming on NBCOlympics.com.
Okay, and then still yet to see an alpine event. The downhill, of course, one of the first events was postponed. So where are we there?
Yeah, we've been doing some schedule juggling given the wind situation. The men's downhill scheduled yesterday on Sunday. That's been pushed out now to Thursday. And the men's Super G originally scheduled Thursday. That's now on Friday, and that'll be another opportunity for Ted Ligety. The men's alpine combined is still on track for tomorrow, or actually later today on Tuesday here in Pyeongchang. Probably going to see some weather impacts on that too, but hopefully it's just delays and not postponements to another day. And then a really unusual postponement today, the women's giant slalom, which would have been Mikaela Shiffrin's debut event here at the Olympic Winter Games in South Korea. That was also pushed off to Thursday. So we'll be running the men's downhill same day as the women's giant slalom. Different venues, and Mikaela will be making her debut now coming up in the slalom, and that'll be taking place on Wednesday, Korea time. You can watch that later Tuesday evening on NBC.
Okay, and then again, if people want to see it, they can watch it live. We can also wait till prime time.
Yeah, you know, there's so many ways to watch it now. And if you want to get a little bit of an insight, go to our website, uskiandsnowboard.org. We've got a nice viewer's guide there to kind of walk you through the schedules and things. Just note some of the event schedules have changed, so you need to adjust your viewing accordingly. But simplest thing is just to go to NBCOlympics.com, and you can get all the action and live streaming of every single event.
Okay, Tom, we'll talk to you later this week. Thanks. And well, joining me now in the studio, Abby McNulty, Executive Director of the Park City Education Foundation. Good morning to you.
Hi, Leslie.
Well, we wanted to talk about preschool funding. Apparently, you have some results from long-term studies that have been done showing that money invested in preschool, early preschool, really shows a great return on investment.
That's right. The Minnesota Fed Bank actually did a study on this several years ago. And for every dollar that's invested in preschool, $13 is returned to the community.
Wow.
It's one of the best investments we can make in education. Early childhood education is so important.
What's the savings, though? I mean,
the savings is over a lifetime, and it's everything from needing less special ed in the schools, less reading intervention, to savings with police and remedial services, all the long-term benefits of a quality education by getting kids reading and ready to go from kindergarten.
Right. And so what you found is that kids who do go to preschool are kind of ready to, you know,
yeah.
start running you
yeah.
know, by the time they hit kindergarten?
Exactly. And so kids, you know, you go to preschool for 2 years, you learn everything from how to sit in the classroom and listen to a teacher and get in line to early literacy and early numeracy. And so kids who enter into kindergarten all on the same playing field and ready to go have a much better chance of success over time. We're seeing that the Park City School District preschool program has been in place since 2011. And kids who have participated in the program are outperforming their peers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's an amazing program. And for our community, it's an opportunity for everyone to get on a level playing field. Park City School District Preschool offers subsidized tuition with donations from the Education Foundation. So it's an affordable entry for every family that wants to go, from our low-income families to our working-class families, to everyone. It's an amazing program.
Right. So is it just – it's based on registration? I mean, you just – if you first come, first serve.
Registration opens today. There's two full-day four-year-old programs that were the pilot funding was provided by the Ed Foundation. And those programs are truly incredible. They're at McPullen and Parley's. And then there's also half-day programs, half-day four-year-old programs and half-day three-year-old programs.
All right. And again, it's just it's an opt-in.
Mm-hmm. And so if you're a family, you know, and you have kids at the elementary school, now there's this opportunity to send your child to the preschool at the same elementary school. Same drop-off and pick-up for the full-day four-year-old classrooms.
All right. And then we've gone to a full-day kindergarten. That still, again, is voluntary?
No, actually. I mean, I think it is voluntary, yeah. but it's full-day kindergarten offered at all the elementary schools. So you could pick up your child, I presume, in the middle of the day. My daughter went through full-day kindergarten last year, and it's amazing. And it's it's fun. This, you know, it's the social aspect as well as the academic aspect.
All right. So how does Park City, you had mentioned that you kind of kicked off it, but now the school district has absorbed the costs?
We continue to fund preschool. As we started off, their conversation is one of the best investments we can make in terms of returns to the community long term over time and to families. So we continue to support the preschool program at about $160,000 a year, and it keeps tuition low so that it's affordable for all families to participate. And we also have partners like Vail Epic Promise is a partner in our preschool program, helping sponsor it as well, ensuring that our working families have great, affordable preschool options in this town.
Okay. And as you mentioned, registration is open. People just need to go to the school. Is that how it works?
They go to the Park City School District. Registration happens at the Park City School District office, and it opens today.
Okay. Let's see. And coming up next month, we've got Dr. Seuss's birthday that we always like to celebrate. What are you going to do with that?
Yeah. Well, reading is the most important thing you can do for little people. And so Read Across America is Dr. Seuss's birthday. It's March 2nd. And for every volunteer that comes into the classroom to read that day, we donate a book back to the schools. And so last year we donated 500 books. And so we're doing the same thing this year. All the elementary schools are hosting volunteer readers, and you can sign up to read at the school district's website, pcschools.us.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
That's it. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thanks. It's Abby McNulty, Executive Director of Park City Education Foundation.